You know, we use the term straight to DVD a lot, don't we, Joe? We say straight to DVD. Then sometimes we say our film's very televisual. We say straight to TV. This film, I think, has a whole new category underneath that. It's straight in the bin. It's got to go straight in the bin. Hello and welcome to the Danjo Film Show, episode 30. I cannot believe it. It's our last show of 2020. Good riddance, 2020. Hope you're well. Hope you're staying safe and enjoying a lovely new year. As always, I'm joined by my gorgeous co-host, who's always looking fetching and handsome at any time of the year, especially new year. And it's Joe Richards. Hi, babe.
Hi, babe. New year, new me. New year, new me.
Do you remember that back in January? Everyone was like, 2020 is going to be my year.
Yeah. I mean, how devastating. Like a start of a new decade, like 2020, new year. Like, oh, there was so much to look forward to. So much hope at the kind of turning point to 20. Well, I say that. Obviously, you've got Brexit and things like that. So it wasn't like all hope. But yeah, 2020, the beginning of a decade, and it'll go down in the history books as being not the best start to the 2020s, that's for sure. Corona and everything like that. But look, we made it. And who would have thought, 12 months later, pretty much, we're still here and we're still doing the show. And we've managed to survive. And not just from a personal point of view, you know, we've managed to survive. We haven't had COVID, luckily. Or maybe we did and we just didn't realize. But in terms of the show, because obviously we started the show, I think, around about mid-Jan. And I think we were about 3 shows in before COVID hit. And, you know, we had a studio, we had everything set up, ready to go. And then COVID hit. And we've had to kind of improvise and kind of really kind of drill down and try and find a ways of getting guests and recording. And we've, you know, developed so much over the past couple of months. So, you know, I'm proud of us.
Definitely. And you're right. And I feel like this year globally has not been great, but it doesn't necessarily mean that personally it hasn't been a good year for people. We've made the best of it. And in particular with the show, you're right. I mean, we started off January, we were ballers, we were VIP. We had our own studio, and, you know, we had it all, you know, we were entourage, we were in the big leagues. And then, like you said, COVID hit and we had to go online. And that was strange at first. I'm sure you can agree. Lots of Wi-Fi issues, lots of interruptions and all that kind of stuff that you get to used to. But we've done so well, and I feel like this year has been amazing because of the show. I don't know about you, but I really feel like this show has helped us a lot, just keep busy as well, you know, and keep us focused and talking about movies and stuff that we love. So I thought we've done a lovely first year. I can't wait for many more years, and fingers crossed maybe we're back in that luxurious studio again, sipping our martinis.
Absolutely, fingers crossed. But I was going to ask you, so what have been, in terms of the Dan and Joe Film Show, what have been some of your highlights of the first year of 2020 of the show?
Well, that is a good question, Joe. For me, it was that first episode. I think the lead up to it, because we were so excited and we'd been talking about it for so long. And I remember going to the studio in Cardiff, and sitting down and just doing it, and the feeling I got afterward, it was just like unlike anything I've ever felt before. And I think both of us, coming from like a radio background, and we were unsure about podcasts. I was definitely unsure about it because I thought, oh, like an hour of us talking, like who's going to listen to that? But I think looking back at that first episode, the amount of support we've had, the amount of listens we've had, it's still our most listened to show, our first one. And I think it's because people had said for a long time, like, you guys should do a podcast together because, you know, you get on really well, you love talking about movies. And that for me was like, might always be my favorite episode. But there've been many highlights. You know, I've got to say, Mo Murphy from the Razzies, amazing. Our second show to get them on was just great. Obviously, having Derek Bort from Unhinged and actually going to watch the film in the cinema. And I went with my mum and his name coming up and I go, oh, mum, I have interviewed him. It was great. It was great. And yeah, just loads and loads of highlights this year. Loads of great guests, you know, a lot of which we had on with our Christmas special, which I was very, very happy to see. But yeah, I cannot say we've ever done really a bad show. You know, things maybe haven't gone quite to plan at times, which always happens in your first year. It's like having a baby. Things always don't go to plan. You misplace it somewhere else and you forget about it. But yeah, those for me are some of the highlights. And yeah, just kind of the content we've covered this year. We've done a lot of LGBTQ films. We've done a lot of diverse films. I'm really proud of what we do on the show. So yeah, for me, those are the highlights. What about you, Joey? What has been your highlight this year for the show?
Well, yeah, there's just been so many to kind of name just a few. But I think like you, you know, I think the fact that it's our first year, we're going into this, we didn't know what was going to happen. The support has been really great from people who've listened, and the feedback has just gotten better and better the more and more we've done it. It's just been such a complete trial by fire, hasn't it? You know, in a way, we couldn't have asked for like a better kind of first year to do the show, because I think it's had us so much on our A game in terms of, you know, constantly being flexible around film releases, planning a show, and then all of a sudden cinemas closing, so then we've got to rethink the whole show and rejig everything else. So I think, you know, it's kept us on our toes, and I think that's been brilliant. And some of my highlights, I've got to say, you know, we've been lucky to have such great guests, whether that be film journalists and people working, you know, in the film journalism sector. As you said, a lot of those were on our show last week. But big names as well, you know, people who have worked in film, like Derek Bort, you mentioned, from Unhinged. That was absolutely fantastic. Sam Spruill from Mangrove, Steve McQueen's Mangrove. That was, like, fantastic, because I'd seen him in so much before. So to get the opportunity to speak to him. And then obviously Craig Roberts was a massive highlight, because I got to see Eternal Beauty back in February before COVID hit, like right before everything kind of went into lockdown. And it was kind of up in the air as to when Eternal Beauty was going to get released. So it was a real kind of full circle thing, I think, to kind of actually have him on the show a few months later talking about a film which I loved, and I know you really loved as well. Like I said, I'm just proud of us for actually achieving and actually managing to get these people on the show with all things considered. And I think we've made a lot of great friends as well. And it's been great to kind of meet the people that you see on Twitter and Instagram and things like that. And it's been great to have that dialogue, you know, over Zoom about film. So many highlights, and I can't wait for next year's as well.
Yeah, 2021. I cannot believe it. Hopefully we'll get even bigger guests, bigger names, yeah, and some returning ones as well, of course. But you're totally right. I think I speak on both of us when I say that every guest we've had on the show, every director, filmmaker, writer, whoever it was, they've been so down to earth, yeah, so gracious to us. You know, we're not Empire Magazine, but who knows, one day we might get up to there. But just so genuinely lovely and down to earth. And that was the biggest thing for me, because I think you hear different things in the media. You get a perception that everyone, whether it's in America or over in the UK, oh, you know, that they can't connect to normal people. Completely wrong. Every guest we've had, every, you know, filmmaker, director has been a pleasure to have on. So yeah, fingers crossed 2021, you know, back in the studio, and then yeah, getting good stuff going.
Absolutely. And a big thank you to everybody who's taken the time to listen over the last 12 months. It means a lot. Feedback, as I said, has been great. And yeah, just thank you. And hopefully, you know, you've enjoyed the shows and will continue to listen going forward in 2021.
I mean, we do have some very sexy voices, Joe and I. So, I mean, that's one thing to keep you going. I know some people just go to bed thinking, oh,
I wonder what they look like. I wonder what they look like.
And they're disappointed there when, yeah, they see us.
So disappointed. If they Google us or like find us on Instagram or something like that, they'd be so, so disappointed.
They're like, Joe Richards. Oh, Stacey. Yeah. I'm joking. I'm like, Stacey. Oh, he's got a beard. Oh, I didn't know.
Beard. Oh, he's got some facial hair. Yeah, he's got some facial hair. He's got salt and pepper look. Salt and pepper.
Salt and pepper. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So it's been an incredible year, and like we did it in the halfway point of 2020, we're going to look back at the year in review, and we are going to choose our favorite and least favorite film of 2020. Obviously, very strange year this year, because I feel like years gone by, we've had a lot more cinema releases, and we've had a lot less of those. Those have been sprinkled across the year, and a lot more streaming releases, which if you told me 3 or 4 years ago that the majority of this year was streaming releases, I'd be like, you're crazy. I'm not doing that. But I think, you know, we've just adapted to it, haven't we? And we've just, you know, embraced streaming. And I think this year, in all fairness to it, it's provided us with the films that we've been able to review, because without it, we would just be twiddling our thumbs. We wouldn't have anything to do. So big thank you to the streaming platforms this year. So Joe and I, obviously, lots of films to select, lots of great films this year, lots of not so great films this year. And let's just see what's changed since the halfway point, because obviously it's very interesting if either of us have a different best film or a different worst film. So Joe, you're going to go first. We're going to start off with the worst, the garbage. And Joe, take it away with your worst film of the year.
Right. Okay. So at the midway point of 2020, my worst film was The Wrong Missy. Produced by Adam Sandler, and I hated it with a passion. But what I really wanted to talk about is the film that I get to talk about today, because we've done a bit of a switch. Because you've actually, yeah, we've done a bit of a switcheroo. You've actually seen a film now which is worse than the one you saw back when we did the Midway show, whereas I haven't seen a worse film than the one I'm going to talk about. So I'm going to steal your mid-year worst film.
You can have it.
I'm so glad. thank you so much. And that is The Last Days of American Crime.
The world is in chaos. These streets. But the government was about to fight back.
30 seconds!
That signal freezes you. It stops you from doing anything illegal.
Who the fuck are you?
They used the signal to kill your brother. I want to use it to steal their money. What do you say, Brick? You a man who can help me steal $30 million? Because your brother thought you were.
What about the girl?
You ever hear that expression? Behind every great man is a woman.
I'm just a girl who likes fast cars and big numbers.
What's your angle?
In the light of the signal, cops turn in all the weapons.
One thing you're gonna learn about me is that I'm all about timing. You can have money, but when you pull off the last crime in American history, that's legacy. So you want revenge? I want legacy.
We'll all hurt the ones who try and love us.
I feel like one of us is gonna take a bullet tonight. You go first.
Now, this streamed on Netflix, and I remember the first thing I thought when I saw the trailer, and it comes up on, you know, the main screen, The Last Days of America, 2 hours, 30 minutes. Could not believe it. 2 hours, 30 minutes. I mean, Netflix this year, I mean, they've been pushing those run times anyway. I mean, you know, The Kissing Booth 2 is like longer than The Dark Knight or like Batman Begins or something like that. But that's okay, because that was cheesy and light and kind of enjoyed that and a bit trashy. The Last Days of American Crime, on the other hand, oh my days. It just came out at the wrong possible time as well, because I remember it came out during the whole kind of Black Lives Matters protests, when the world really was very kind of tense place, you know, as if it wasn't already with everything going on with COVID. Obviously, there was that shocking footage of George Floyd being murdered by an American police officer. And obviously, worldwide, there was outcry and there were protests and there were riots. And then this film came out, and I thought, the last thing I want to do is spend two and a half hours in the company of a film which is all about violence and bang, 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 and about America and guns and loud noises. Rah, rah, rah. That's literally all I remember of it, is just constant. Rah, rah, rah. And but I sat through it painfully I sat through it. And I just thought it had no charisma at all. It was an ugly film, both like in terms of its cinematography and in terms of its whole attitude. I mean, it thought like it was being so groundbreaking. The concept itself, I'll give it credit. The concept itself, which is, you know, all about like in the, you know, near future, and in the final response to terrorism and crime, the US government plans to broadcast a signal, making it impossible for anybody to commit an awful act. That is a great concept. That's really good concept, but it's just handled so poorly here. And Edgar Ramirez stars as the lead, Graham Brickle, and he is an actor who I've enjoyed massively in each of his roles. And I just thought he was so uncharismatic here that it was painful to watch. That is definitely my worst film of the year, but it didn't offend me per se, but it was just so long, so loud, so ugly. I mean, at points I didn't really know what was going on. It just irritated me. It really annoyed me. And it, as I said, it just came out at the completely wrong time of, you know, the year. And I think Netflix kind of made the mistake in kind of continuing with the release when they did. So my 2020 worst film of the year is The Last Days of American Crime. I just want to give a shout out to a couple of other films as well. So The Wrong Missy, obviously you've heard, again on Netflix, did not like that. The Babysitter, Killer Queen, did not like that. I really liked the first film, but the second one just really let it drop. I'm Thinking of Ending Things by Charlie Kaufman. That was so bad. And that was an interesting one because obviously, that was a Marmite movie. There were loads of people.
So divisive.
So divisive. And I was sat there thinking, am I missing something? But again, it was so long. And that nearly killed me off. And then another one worth mentioning, Dolly Parton's Christmas on the Square, which we talked about in a couple of shows ago, which it's great for like a laugh, but otherwise abysmal. So those are my turkeys of the year.
And boys and girls, can you answer this very, very good question? What do all those films have in common, boys and girls? Come on, anyone got an answer?
I got an answer, sir.
Oh, yes, yes, yes,
Mr.
over you.
Thomas.
Yes, of course, yeah.
They're all streaming on Netflix.
Ah, well done. A point for you. Good
boy. Thank you, sir.
Yes. Unbelievable, isn't it? You're like bottom five all in Netflix. Who would have thought, eh?
Well, you know, but to be fair, I will say Netflix have done great stuff as well.
Yeah.
They have done really great stuff as well, but it just so happens that I think Netflix have released the majority of films we've seen this year. So
they've done a lot of the steam work this year. So they're like, you know, we all have bad days. We all have bad days, Netflix, don't worry. Yeah, great picks there, Joe. Great picks. And obviously that film is close to my heart because it was my pick midway through the year. But I've broken up with it. I found a new lover in the form of my worst film of the year. And this one's, forget the turkey. Forget the stuffing in the turkey. This is like a bit of gone-off chicken that's fallen on the floor that just wants to be put in the bin. And this is a film that nobody has heard of, right? I think for the first time in my life, I was the first person to rate this on Letterboxd.
No.
I can't say that about many films. Yeah, genuinely. I feel like I'm the only person in the UK that's seen this movie, genuinely.
Wow, okay.
It's shocking. So this is The Loss Adjuster.
It's the season of goodwill and a time for giving. A time for love.
I've met someone else. It's me, Dom.
And kindness to all.
What are you looking at, your bint?
Martin, open the damn door!
Hello, buddy.
Hello, Mr. Dyer. It's a busy day ahead for you.
Hello there, Mrs. Rogers.
You are late.
But Martin is having a bad day.
I don't believe this. It would have been cheaper to stay in bed.
Call me Gimp. Everyone else does.
What's that awful smell?
Yeah, a rat.
And it's about to get a whole lot worse.
Steve, honey!
Mama's here!
Could your wife have a little surprise for you, perhaps?
Oh, yes. Quite a big one.
That's nice.
No, not really.
Bastard.
Promised me we'd set up home together. I told me you owned the place.
Complete bastard.
What, are you an accountant or something?
Take the bloody soup.
Well, I don't want it either.
Maybe you don't want it. It's all I've got left. You hear me? Happy Christmas.
So, does that mean you think you can help me?
What do you do? Spend your old man's money?
Something like that.
You're a bad girl. I have a soft spot for bad girls.
You're born in or you're selling. There's plenty of fish in the sea.
Sometimes you have to lose it all.
This was in the glove box.
Get back on the horse.
There is no dress rehearsal in life. This is it.
To find out what really matters. Can you hear the sound of sleigh bells ringing?
The sound of laughter and children singing. Well, I need a drink. I thought it would be lovely if you have time, of course, to join me.
Now, bit of background on this. This has been playing in cinemas just before cinemas closed here in Wales. Very limited release. The trailer played and I turned to Joe and I was like, oh, I was like, that looks absolute rubbish. She was like, I'm no way am I seeing that. And then Joe looked at me and was like, you're going to see it, aren't you? And I was like, yes. I'm sorry, Dad. I'm addicted to it. This is The Lost Adjuster, directed by Vincent Woods. This is his first movie.
Well done, Vincent. Sounds like you've done a good job.
Yeah, you started off strong here. And this stars the one and only Luke Goss. Now, for those who don't know Luke Goss as an actor, that's perfectly fine because he's not really an actor. He's a singer from the 80s. He was in, I think, the Goss Brothers or something like that. I don't even know where he was from, really. But he was a big in the 80s as a singer. Is what I know. And then also joining him in this, Vincent Woods must love 90s pop bands because he's just gone to town. He's got Kim Marsh, you know, was big in the early 2000s, noughties, yeah. Then he's got Martin Kemp from Spandau Ballet, who we love as well, Martin. And then somewhere in the middle of this, we've got Dame Joan Collins just shows up. And I could not believe she was in this film. I was like, what are you doing in here, Joan? So this is a story of Luke Goss. He is a insurance loss adjuster. Now, I had never heard of this title. Basically, he goes to clients and he works out their insurance and kind of what they need to, how much they need to lose in order to kind of make the payments back up and all that kind of stuff. And he's hapless. He's unhappy. His wife, Kim Marsh, has left him. She's been cheating on him. He wears this really grotty old suit. Looks like it's from Primark for £10 in a bargain bin. Not good. He refers to it a lot during the film, so I might buy him a suit if he's that concerned about it. But basically, he goes to meet all these clients, and they all start to inspire him. And it's a story of hope, of forgiveness, of a guy, you know, bad on his luck, and somehow he's able to bounce back and make the best out of life. And it is very much a Christmas Carol kind of message to it. You know, somebody who is having a really, really hard day. And then, you know, he finds that actually giving back to people, giving back to the community, he turns out to be a lot happier inside. So that's a lovely message for Christmas, right? And I didn't know this was a Christmas film at all. The storyline doesn't really fall into the Christmas film kind of cliches. But I went into this. I was the only person in the cinema. I think I may be the only person that went to that film in the week. I've got to say, when I bought the ticket, the guy was like, "What, blimmin' heck?" He's like, "You go to see this." This is also available on streaming as well. And you know, we use the term straight to DVD a lot, don't we, Joe? We say straight to DVD. Then sometimes we say our film's very televisual. We say straight to TV. This film, I think, has a whole new category underneath that. It's straight in the bin. It's got to go straight in the bin. Honestly, I sat there for 100 minutes, an hour and 40 minutes, and I was absolutely perplexed that a film of this quality, of this scale, of this budget was actually allowed to be released in cinemas. I mean, we say this a lot, but I don't think I've seen a film so misplaced to be in cinemas. And it made me really sad because this year's been hard on cinemas, you know? They've not got their way. COVID has really, really caused a lot of issues for them when it comes to releases. And this is a film they do not want and they do not need because, firstly, it's not going to generate any money in the box office. And secondly, it's just a hugely, you know, really, really horribly put together, terrible cinematography, just a really dire script. There's a sequence that takes place inside an old man's house for 40 minutes. They stay in this room and he like dies suddenly. And then he orders like this stripper to come and visit him in the house and she's upstairs in the bedroom. And it just felt like an episode of Hollyoaks. It was awful.
What?
It was
absolutely horrendous.
40
minutes in this old man's house.
Not kidding, I timed it.
Wow.
I went to the toilet twice. I went once and took my time, and then I tried again just to kind of try and find an excuse. But I knew I had to go back and finish it. It is just horrendous. I mean, I'm all in favour of British independent films. I'm all for that. But I really think this budget could have been given to a filmmaker that could have done some good, that has ambition, is bold in their filmmaking. This film is just so cliche, so generic. You've seen it time and time again. And then the worst bit of it is the last 10 minutes, Luke Goss, who, by the way, I think he's 52 in real life, just starts having a love interest with Lorna Fitzgerald from EastEnders, who's 24.
Wow. Okay.
And I was just like, this is really weird. Okay, I'm going to go. So yeah, The Loss of Justice is my worst film of 2020. Worst film I've seen for quite a while. I'm so glad, really, that I found a different film to end this year on. I was just waiting for this film, you know, the last month of the year. And it could potentially be the last film I see in the cinema this year. But fingers crossed it won't be. So yeah, that's my worst film of the year. The Loss of Jester. I lost a lot of hours over it.
Okay, well, I'm immediately going to go and find that on streaming now. That might be my Christmas Day film this year. Gather the family around. Come on, kids. I mean, it's got something for everybody, you know. The parents will know Luke Goss. The kind of teenager, the people our age will know Kim Marsh.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's Christmassy. It's got strippers. And, you know, what more could you want? So that's your worst film of 2020. What other turkeys come to mind for you?
Well, I've spared Netflix a little bit here because I feel like I've been maybe a bit kinder to Netflix. So I don't have some of the picks that you have. But The Last of Days of American Crime, 100%. Obviously, that's on my list. Fatal Affair was another one. Yes. Oh my gosh. It is basically Fatal Attraction, but all the personality just stripped from it. It was so dull. Even my mum, who loves those types of films, my mum's no critic, she was like, well, that was rubbish, wasn't it? And horrendous, really, really bad. Then you've got films like Fantasy Island, which we saw before COVID happened, which was just so awful and it made me angry that it was the last film that we saw before COVID. And yeah, you know, we have had a lot of turkeys this year, to be fair. Mm. I've spared Dolly. I did find Christmas on the Square to be a bit charming. So I've spared her, but yeah, a lot of turkeys this year. And fingers crossed, we always see this every year, fingers crossed 2021 will be different, but I don't know.
Here's hoping.
So we've tackled the turkeys. Now it's on to the Christmas feast, the pigs in blanket, the Yorkshire puddings, as we say, the best of the year. And this was a very, very difficult decision for both of us. So Joe, what is your favourite film of 2020?
So my favourite film of 2020 is Parasite. It's Parasite.
No way.
And I think, you know, I mean, I've been looking at a lot of people's lists. And I think for a lot of people, that's kind of been the highlight of 2020. And I'm so, so thankful that it came out when it did, because I think if I hadn't have gotten to see it in a cinema, it would have been a very, very different experience. Going to see it in the cinema was one of my favorite experiences of 2020. The word of mouth around this film before it came out was just so massive. I remember the trailers were great because the trailers themselves, they didn't give much away as to what the story was. And that's a rare thing in this day and age, going into a film and not knowing exactly what the film is about. So going in to see Parasite, I knew nothing about it. And if you haven't seen Parasite yet, and I know a lot of people have, if you haven't seen it yet, do go in without knowing, you know, much about it at all, because that's part of the fun of it. It's directed by Bong Joon-ho. It made history at the Oscars, and I think that really kind of put it in everybody's field of vision. I think everybody, you know, kind of rushed out to see it, especially after it won the Oscars and made Oscar history, film history. And it's directed by Bong Joon-ho, and it tells the story of two families, one very rich, one very wealthy family, and one very poor, down on its luck family. And their worlds collide when the young boy of the poor family gets a job teaching the rich family's young child. And slowly but surely, the poor family start to infiltrate this rich family's life and in a way try to take over it. And it's dark and comically funny. You watch the first hour and it's one thing, and then the next, like the final hour, is just something completely different. And there's a midpoint where the poor family are kind of like living in this rich family's home while they go away, and somebody buzzes the kind of intercom, and from there on it just blew my mind. I just remember the atmosphere in the cinema. Everybody was on the edge of their seat. Everybody was deadly silent, just kind of waiting to see what happens next. And it goes to some really, really dark places, specifically the basement. And it just blew me away. It's very rare that me and my better half, Hannah, kind of come out of a film and we completely agree on it. But we just came out of it and both of us were just like, wow, that is something, you know, extraordinary. When we look back in the next 10 years, when we look back at the last 10, you know, years of film, this, I think, will still be very much in high regard. I think it'll still very much be in people's list of their favorite films of the last 10 years, just because it is an all-timer as far as I'm concerned. I think it's got everything in it. It's got a great script. Like I said, it's got dark humor. It's got, you know, a political undertone. It deals with the rich and the wealthy and their lifestyle, and it deals, you know, with the lower class as well. And I think just the cinematography as well is so clever, the way that they always talk about, you know, overstepping boundaries, and how Bong Joon-ho kind of shot it within squares and lines. And I just think it's a multi-layered film. It's a multifaceted film, which just is entertaining but also challenges you as well. And when you kind of peel the different layers off of it, you just find something else and something else. So I love it. I'm a big fan of Bong Joon-ho anyway. I have been for a few years. I've loved his other stuff, so it's great that this is kind of, you know, made in like very hot kind of property in Hollywood now, and I can't wait to see what he does next. So Parasite is my favorite film of 2020. It's available on Amazon Prime. So if you haven't seen it yet, it's available in two different versions, the color version, and there's a black and white version as well, which I haven't had a chance to see yet, but I'm looking forward to watching over the next couple of weeks. Just a couple of honorable mentions, the ones which just missed the number one spot. Films which I've mentioned before, Queen and Slim, absolutely loved it. That's at the beginning of the year. Eternal Beauty, which, you know, we had Craig Roberts talked on. I loved that. A film which I've not had a chance to talk about on the show, which I absolutely adored, Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Mm. That's in my top five of the year. I think it's absolutely extraordinary. Do go watch it. Do go seek it out. It is beautiful. It is funny. It is romantic. It's heartbreaking. It's got all you want from a film. And His House, you know, we were talking about Netflix, which is getting, yes, a lot of abuse from me especially, but His House came out recently on Netflix, and it's a horror film with political undertones, which, you know, are the best horror films really, which are about something. And it's about, you know, two refugees who kind of move into a council house on an estate in England, and all these kind of supernatural things start happening within the house. And again, it deals with that great thing that Stephen King always does and talks about, is that the ghosts are the demons we carry with us. And, you know, as the film develops, I mean, the final twist at the end of that film, when you find out what's kind of going on and why these two people are being haunted, it just blew me away. And it really kind of stood out as one of the highlights. Uncut Gems, Adam Sandler, absolutely loved. Saint Maud, brilliant horror film, which is, you know, getting a lot of praise in the Independent Film Awards as well coming up. Rocks, which we talked about on our show with Anna Smith. And finally, kind of honorable mention for The Five Bloods by Spike Lee. And I just love that performance from Delroy Lindo. And I can't wait to see what happens with him next year, because hopefully, justifiably, he'll be up for a few awards. So those are my honorable mentions, as well as Parasite being my favorite film.
Some great picks there, Joe, I've got to say. And you're so right about Parasite, because I remember you going to watch it and you sent over the 5-star rating, and I was in the pub, I almost dropped my pint. I couldn't believe it. I was like, blimmin' heck. So I remember going to watch it just before COVID. I think it was the end of February. I went on a Saturday. I did like a triple bill, and oh, just blown away by it. I'm so glad it won Best Picture. And you're right, it just kind of keeps escalating and changing direction. And like I said, so multi-layered as well. And you're right, it's kind of darkly funny as well. Again, very, very ambitious filmmaking from Bong Joon-ho. And I'm so glad it won the Oscars. I feel like moments like that don't happen often, unfortunately, in kind of the Hollywood culture that we live in. Normally you've got, you know, kind of directors that Quentin Tarantino, for example, or I don't know, kind of, you know, we have those auteurs that we see time and time again who keep getting nominated all the time and deservedly so. But Bong Joon-ho is somebody who's made excellent work beforehand. It hasn't quite been recognised. So it's great that he won the best picture this year. So really, really good. And yeah, for me this year, I think my favourite film of the year has not changed either. For me, it's got to be the same film. I tried really hard. There were a couple of contenders, but you just cannot beat Waves.
Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not rude. It doesn't boast. Love also forgets wrong.
How I do.
It's been hard, hasn't it?
Let go of a prayer for you.
How you doing with everything?
I'm good. Just a sweet word.
You know it's okay if you're not.
The table is prepared for you.
I'm trying to give you the tools to succeed in this world. It's not easy out there. Everything I do is for y'all. Everything.
I know you're under a lot of pressure right now, but I'm just getting really scared.
You'll have this place to call home.
Everything's gonna be okay, all right?
Always.
We're in this together.
Look at you!
You mean look at me?
I'm the one that's trying to hold this family together.
You pushed him!
Lord knows I've held on to way too much hate in my life. But all we have is now. All we have is now.
I spoke a lot about it in our midway show, so I'm not going to talk about it again. But just to, like Parasite, really employ people to go and watch this. I went into this knowing absolutely nothing. I'd seen snippets of the trailer, and I thought, oh, wow, this looks really pretentious. This looks like a Sundance indie film that just is so up his own, you know. I just was not interested in it whatsoever, and I was absolutely just blown away by it on every single level, on a cinematic level, on a thematic level. On a personal level as well, because like Parasite, it's a film that escalates very, very quickly after the second half. It turns into a completely different film about remorse, about guilt, about violence, about kind of society and the issues that some of us feel very strongly about. And the film tackles those, I think, in a really, really kind of ambitious way. And, you know, there's as a piece of film, there's some really interesting technical aspects to the film as well. The aspect ratio, how it just kind of draws in and in and in, and that builds the tension really, really nicely. What I will say is I don't think people should spoil anything about this film, because the less you know going in, the better, honestly. Because, you know, like Parasite, you think it's going in one direction and it completely takes off course and goes somewhere else. I had my hands over my mouth most of the films. I was just jaw-dropped at moments. Some excellent performances here from the cast. You've got Kelvin Harris Jr., who's an up-and-comer. Lucas Hedges, who we know from Boy Erased, he just had a really good run, hasn't he, with these kind of, you know, Academy acclaimed films. Taylor Russell is another one. She's also in another film I love this year, Words on Bathroom Walls, which I'll talk about in a bit. But yeah, she's onto something good this year. I mean, she's appearing in all my favourite films. But yeah, I absolutely adored this film to bits. I was just kind of transcended into this world. The cinematography, you know, is just simply stunning. But underneath that, you have a film that's, you know, I personally really, really connected with. And I found it difficult at times to watch because of the material in the film. But the film doesn't shy away from that, which I thought was really, really important. So yeah, I absolutely love this. And yeah, nothing has beat it this year. And bear in mind, I watched this back in January, which I do find January and February, because it's maybe because it's the Academy month for films that are coming out. I just find that I just kind of, they're always in my top five. But other films this year that I loved, you've got, like I said, Words on Bathroom Walls, which I saw recently, and it's a great coming-of-age drama. It tackles the stigma of schizophrenia really, really well. I feel like that's never explored very well in films. So that's an excellent film. Go and check that out. I've also got Parasite. I completely agree with. That was my second. 1917, I adored on a cinematic level. Really, really impressed me. As a spectacle as well, just watching in the cinema in IMAX was just amazing. Then you've got Guy Ritchie's The Gentleman, which I absolutely loved to bits. The script is so sharp and funny, and it's a really, really nice take on kind of the gangster noir genre. And the cast were brilliant, really, really good, especially Matthew McConaughey. I thought he was excellent. Also, you've got Onward. This is Onward. I thought it was the best Pixar film this year. The only Pixar film this year, I think, but there we are. and also Happiest Season, which I thought was just such a sweet, charming, heartfelt Christmas film to end the year with a really, really lovely LGBTQ message in there. I thought it was a nice representation of that. And again, Kristen Stewart this year, for me, has just been excellent. Her, Elizabeth Moss, for me, have been real trailblazers. And so, yeah, really, really, really strong year this year. So, fingers crossed, 2021 will be in the cinemas more, though, in 2021.
Yeah, definitely. And again, I was glad. I loved Waves as well. That is in my top 10 as well. And yeah, I thought it was brilliant. And again, I'm glad that I got to see it on a big screen. And I remember, like I said, I'm not going to spoil it, but like you rightly said, you know, go in not knowing anything about it, because I remember that midway point where it just turns on its head. And I remember audibly swearing in like quite loud in the cinema. And it was quite empty. There were probably like three other people in there, like a couple and another guy. And I remember just going, oh, and then just like letting rip, because I just was shocked. I could not believe it. And it just, you felt it. You felt what was happening in the movie. And I think that is a fantastic film. And such a shame that it didn't get nominated for more awards. Happiest Season, I'm with you. I think it's absolutely wonderful. Probably out of all the recent Christmas films, like of all the Christmas films we've had this year, this has been, Happiest Season was definitely the most original. Even though it's dealing with like the same things we've seen before, it was definitely the most original. It felt fresh and it was moving and witty and sharp and tremendous. And The Gentleman, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I saw it back in January, like literally I think came out New Year's Day or the day after, I think. I remember seeing that. I think that was the first film I saw in 2020, and it is hilarious, and it was so good to see Guy Ritchie back on top form. So fantastic choices there, as always, Dan.
Thank you, Joe. I also just love Hugh Grant be like, hello, Roman.
cinema.
So fantastic display of films this year. But before we go, obviously a lot of big releases still left to be released in 2021.
Enough space?
It's getting a bit crowded over there in the release schedule. But obviously we've got films like 007, James Bond, No Time to Die, which we were speaking about this year and back in March when it was delayed the first time. So that will hopefully be coming out April. You've got Black Widow in May. Any other highlights for you next year, Joe, you're looking forward to?
Yeah, so there's a couple. So in January, end of January, there's a film coming out starring Riz Ahmed called Sound of Metal, which was due for release this year, but obviously got pushed back. And I'm hearing a lot of great things about that, about a musician who starts to go deaf. And it was like filmed with a lot of real life deaf people. And apparently he's got some great portrayals of the deaf community in that. So very excited for that. Promising Young Woman, that's due out in February with Carey Mulligan. Hearing a lot of great things about that. And Supernova, which is due out in March and which we've had the pleasure of seeing already. Keep your eyes peeled for some exciting news about that in the new year. And then, yeah, just like some of the big ones, really, No Time to Die. Obviously, we've been waiting on that for so long now. I feel like I've seen the film because it's been so long and you keep hearing more and more plot points about it. I feel like I've already seen it. And of course, A Quiet Place Part 2, which I was so excited for this year. And it got literally like a week, tickets were on sale, and then like tickets were on sale, and then everything went into lockdown. So that like properly devastated me. So when I'm sat in that theater watching A Quiet Place 2, I will be so happy, as long as everybody else stays quiet too, fingers
yeah,
crossed.
Yeah, just you wait. There'll be munchers go... And yeah. It'll be like people on their phone coming in, flashing in your face. Oh, I've missed that so much, Joe. I wish I was watching this at home.
I wish I was watching this at home. That's what it'll be like. Like next year, we'll be in the cinema on a Friday night. We'll be watching three films back to back. People will be coming in and annoying us. We'll be like, I wish this was on streaming.
Go home. Go home. so funny. Yeah, I just can't wait. Fingers crossed, very soon we'll be back to watching those Triple Bills. But yeah, again, please get in touch with us. Let us know your favourite and least favourite films of 2020. You can follow us on Facebook under the Dan and Joe Film Show. We're on Twitter as well, at DJ Film Show on Twitter and Instagram. And again, you can listen to all our old episodes from this year, our catalogue of episodes on Mixcloud, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, so many. And again, yeah, please let us know what you've seen this year and what has really, really impressed you. And all that's left to say is thank you very much for listening to us this year. We will be back in the new year. Have a lovely and safe new year. And anything from you, Joe?
Again, just thank you all for listening. And thank you, Dan. You've been so great this year, not just with the show and everything, but just personally as well. Obviously, you're such a good friend. And, you know, it's been a tough old year. And you've been great through that as well in terms of supporting me outside of the show as well. So thank you as well as our listeners, Dan.
It's what I'm here for. If I could kiss you on the screen right now, I would. Oh, I think I will. I think I'll do a nice Daniel May sloppy kiss on you.
Oh, yeah. Fisherman's friends. Do I look like a fisherman? I actually do.
That'll be coming out soon. We'll be meeting the fishermen again. Looking forward to it.
Fingers crossed.
Thank you so much for listening. Have a lovely new year, and we'll see you very, very soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.